Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and we don't have Christine with us this week, and this is the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that podcast we do twice weekly for people who play with needles. Christine's paying job in the way this week, and so she had to bow out of the midweek one. But Nicola Parkman coming to the rescue all the way from England to help us out, and plus I have lots of questions about reproduction samplers, and you have new charts, and you just came back from the U.S., so we got a lot to talk about. So thanks for helping us out, Nicola.
Oh, you're so welcome. Good evening, everybody.
All right, let's start with my questions. Because, see, okay. I have been working on the sampler, and people are tired of me talking about it, but I've been working on this sampler that Sarah Parr, I think it's 1825, that carries the maiden name of our daughter, and so I'm doing it for her. And this is the first reproduction sampler I have actually physically stitched. So this has been a fun experience, and I am about an eighth of the way done with the thing, and already I can see why people become absolutely addicted to these things. Yeah, what fun.
they grow on you.
Oh, boy, do they. Once I got enough border in so I could start hanging things off of it, you know, start being able to count and do the motifs and the alphabet, it's like, because I have a needlepoint thing that I'm doing at the same time, and yeah. I keep threatening to go back to that, but then every night I sit down and think, I'm going to work on the sampler instead. So,
how have you started to stitch it? Are you doing the border first in its entirety, or are you just working sections?
Well, see, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because what I'm doing, and I was curious how you go about it. What I'm doing is I did the border all the way across the top and about a third of the way down. And then right. I started stitching because I felt like that gave me enough framework that I could count in from the border to put the various motifs in and the alphabet. And I'm not one to, I don't baste off 10 stitch squares. I just, I don't grid the thing. I just put the border in and then count from there. And so, but then I was reading someone who had asked a question about, it was someone who had finished up the border and it had matched up at the end. And that was, yes. That was a little voice in the back of my head that is, you know, what if this doesn't match up? Cause I'm not one to just allow an error to be in the stitching, you know, and I'm not going to tear out a whole border. So I wondered how you go about it because, this is a fairly simple border, but I've also learned the hard way that I can't count on the little girl, Sarah Parr, who stitched it originally, to be consistent in the count of the border stitches. And I had to tear out a whole section because she had, there was five stitches on an angle, and she only did four in one spot, and it completely threw me off. And so I learned that lesson the hard way. So how do you go about your borders?
Okay, well, first of all, these were only little girls. And little girls, as adults, we don't always count correctly. So never presume that the border is the same all the way around. Now, how do I do it? It's how the mood takes me, Carrie.
Nicola. Thanks a lot.
If I was reproducing a chart, I always start with the border and I chart the border all the way around. When I'm stitching a sampler, oh, that's a hard one. It's always good to stitch the border all the way around. But, you know, you can. I always start top left-hand corner. And sometimes it's just nice to work, you know, out, you know, from top left-hand down a bit, top left-hand across a bit, and just build the sampler up from the corner sweeping across. And that way you're taking cross references from lots of different areas, because you know, if you work your border all the way around first, you've got nothing to cross reference it to as you're working around.
Right.
It's a difficult one, and of course borders vary tremendously anyway, so it's a hard question to answer, but you should always count very carefully, count the chart and count what you've stitched as well.
Yeah, and see, that's interesting because I mean, this border is really plain Jane. There's nothing exciting about it, and yet, and the borders. Yeah. I know you like borders, and in your charts, the borders are actually would be exciting to stitch because they're quite elaborate most of the time. And but yeah, I feel like I have to have at least some of the border, and I start top left on just about everything too. I don't know why. I just always have, and because I feel like if I have that border in. Then I can count up and down and left and right and make sure that I'm positioning the other things properly. So
I think most of us probably start top left because if we were going to read a page, we start top left, don't we, to read?
Yes.
So that's probably a sort of an ingrained starting point for everybody.
Yes.
Although some people like to start their samplers right in the center, and there's nothing wrong with that. It has to be what works for you. Nothing is ever cast in stone when you're stitching.
Right. Yeah, no, I know, and there are a lot of people that do that. Yeah, they'll start, and then there are people who start at the bottom and like to work their way up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's whatever works for the individual.
Yeah. And see, that I always started, I long ago learned top left because then I always thought as I finished it, then the finished work got scrolled up or was kept away from me, so there was less chance of me rubbing it or getting body oils on it or something like that. So that was kind of my rationale. But I just feel more comfortable starting in the top left. I don't know why.
Yeah. It's because that's how we're taught to read.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder if the Chinese start top right because they go right
to left.
You
never know. Right? You never know. We'll have to ask. Because, you know, there are Chinese stitchers in our groups on social media. Maybe if one is listening, they could actually leave a comment and let us know.
Because, see, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be very interesting.
Okay.
And, of course, you see, top left is also when you open your chart up. That's the first bit of the chart that you see as well, isn't it?
Right, Yeah, and then the other lesson I learned is when I bought my Millennium frame, I did not buy the shortest upright pieces, the sides. I bought the next side up, and
the medium ones.
That was a mistake because when I start top left, then the reach for me is too far.
Yes,
and so I've had to stitch all that I've stitched so far. I've had to stitch upside down.
Shall I give you a little tip for that?
I'll take a tip, sure.
Okay. This is a very good tip.
Okay.
If you take an old piece of linen, maybe when you've finished a project, you've trimmed a bit off, stitch that onto the linen you're working on, and put that piece of linen onto the top bar, and the piece of linen you're working on will be much further down on your frame.
There we go.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Next one, that's what I'll do.
Okay. Yep.
I also think I'm just going to buy shorter sidebars. But
Yes. Well, you know, I did say the shorter sidebars were the ones I used the most.
Yep.
But if ever anybody's stitching on their Millennium frame and say, for example, they were using silk gauze or plastic canvas, two things that don't fit very comfortably into the groove, or their linen is too short, just stitch a piece of linen onto your ground and put that piece of linen into the groove. That's the easiest way of dealing with, you know, a few different issues.
Yeah, that's a good tip there, yep. Yeah, if there's a frustration I have, and I love my Millennium frame, you know, I don't think for a minute I don't, because I just really think it's a fine piece of equipment. But getting that in there, and I feel like I have to extend those sides longer than I think it should be, but just to get the crossbars, scroll bars to fit on there. And then I always feel like I have to extend them the sidebars longer than they should be. And maybe it's just a technique. Maybe I'm not quite doing it right. But
I think that sounds as if you might not be doing it quite right. Maybe, you know, you need to roll
Nicola,
the fabric
Nicola,
around
you don't,
the bars slightly.
Nicola, you don't have to do the gentle British thing. Just say, Gary, you're wrong. It's okay.
I'm British, Gary.
I've been told I'm wrong before. It's okay.
Yeah. No, maybe you just need to wrap your linen around one of the bars one more time so that you don't have to open the side stretches quite so much. That sounds what that issue is.
Okay, because I just have trouble getting the...
You shouldn't work with them fully extended because you're putting a lot of pressure on those side bars.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't be fully open, and there should be no need for that.
I just have a hard time getting them onto the sidebars when they're fully collapsed. So maybe I need to take another run at it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. Maybe when we meet up, I will give you a demonstration.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
Okay.
I'll take
that. You can video me doing it.
There we go. All right.
And share the experience.
Okay. Now you've presented a challenge. I think tonight when I stitch, I'm going to have to go down there and tear that apart and see if I can't make it come up shorter, because it is extended quite a ways, not all the way, but quite a ways.
There really is no need for that. So, yeah. But there we are. Okay. Yeah. Talking of borders, one of our Nashville releases, Sarah Dawes, the border on that is the most beautiful flowing flowered border. And when I was charting that, I started top left-hand corner. I worked my way down to the bottom on the left-hand side. Then I went back up to the top, worked my way all the way around. And guess what? I didn't meet up. And that was when I was charting it.
Oh, no.
Oh. No, so I spent about 3 or 4 days trying to find where I was this stitch out. And I couldn't. And do you know what I did, Gary, in frustration? I deleted the lot.
No.
And I did. And afterwards, I was so much more frustrated. So I sat down and I did it all over again. And this time I was 2 stitches out. Anyway.
Oh, no.
I tell you what. If I was stitching it for myself, I would have just tweaked the border, but I wasn't. I was reproducing it, and I reproduced stitch accurate. So anyway, I put it away for a few weeks, and when I went back to it and I sat down with a clear head, I realized the little girl in a few places actually stitched her cross stitch rather than over 2 threads, over 3 threads.
Oh, so
that's what put me out. So you know, it's not just stitching borders, sometimes it's reproducing borders as well that are
yeah,
frustrating.
Yeah. I'd have been saying nasty things.
I know. I'm going to show this particular chart this forthcoming weekend. We have 2 beautiful Nashville releases with gorgeous flowing flowered borders and birds. And this one I haven't shown yet. So when everybody has a look at it this weekend, feel sorry for me charting that border twice.
But isn't that the way it is, though, when something like that happens, you say put it away and come back in a couple weeks? It really does help. You know, rather than throwing fits, just put it aside and come back. And with a fresh eye, a lot of times you'll see, oh, there it is. How did I ever miss that?
That's very true. And, you know, the other thing I find applies to that is sometimes in the evening when I'm sitting down stitching and I'm looking at something very, very closely, I think, oh, no, I don't like how that sits. But I've learned that go to bed, look at it the following day, and quite often you can't even see what you were looking at the night before. Yeah. So, yes, it's the same, you know, count to 10, isn't it, really?
yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
I have learned that the hard way, like I said, with this border. But then now every time I go to do the next motif in this thing, I will take a good number of minutes and sit and study the chart.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
And I've already found in there, there's some trees, and I've already found that trees that at a quick glance look to be identical. I don't think one of them is. And, and I would have set off to stitch each one of those without thinking, and I would have been upset. So now by studying them, I've seen, oh, this tree is, she didn't do this stitch and didn't do this stitch, and there's an extra one here. And yeah, I've learned to look at those things and study them before you stitch them.
You know, we're all so eager to put the first few stitches in, but there's nothing like good preparation. If you were going to bake a cake, you would get all your ingredients out first and you would read the instructions. And I think that when you're stitching a chart, it's a good idea to sit down with the chart and read it. You know, just run your eye around the border, looking to see if there are any sort of odd countings. And if there are, make a little note of it. And then you're prepared for when you hit that area.
Yeah. Yeah. In this chart, they had put a red arrow at one spot in the border and had called mm-hmm. out and said, watch yourself here because this is inconsistent. But
yeah.
And so then immediately I think, oh, good, they've called out all of the inconsistencies. No, they just called out that one. And
right.
And so that's you know, so I just relaxed and started stitching because there were no other red arrows. And now it's like, no, I'm not trusting it at all. I'm just doing it on my own. Yeah. Have to ask it when I have to, this one has alphabet and numbers 1 through 12 across the entire width at the top, and then all in capitals, and then alphabet in lowercase underneath it with a line between the two of them. And I have to say that all capital alphabet, when I got to the right side and was finished with it, I have to say it was like, oh, man, I hope I don't have to do that again. Do you find alphabets and numbers to be boring after a while, or is it just part of the deal for you?
No, I never find any part of a sampler boring.
Of course you don't.
No, because those little girls, you know, they were learning to read and write by stitching out their alphabets. When you were in school, think when you were a little boy, you must have written out the alphabet umpteen times as you were learning to read and write. That's just part and parcel of what a sampler is. A sampler was a tool through which the children were educated. And at the end of the day, you don't have to stitch the whole alphabet out in one session or one continuous go. You could stitch A, B, C, and then you could pop down a little bit and treat yourself to something else. And then the next night, stitch another couple of alphabets and treat yourself with a more interesting bit. You know, quite often it's when you're doing any job, it's how you approach it psychologically.
Yeah. Okay. I got to change my thinking on that because I was real tired of alphabets. So, and
you should try stitching a Bristol sampler, a Bristol Orphanage sampler. You'll be doing a lot of different alphabets then.
Yeah. I see some of those. I think, oh boy, how many times are you going to stitch the letter C?
Yeah. But just think how lovely it looks when you finish stitching it.
Right.
You know, you stitch a letter C and you think, I've stitched a beautiful letter C, and then you just do the next one, and you just see your sampler grow.
Yep. And what fun that is to get down to some of the other motifs with the different colors. And, and you know, in a lot of things, you stitch and stitch with the same color. And in these, you just get these little hits of color for this thing, and then that one's done. And you move on to another color or another shape. And that's the part that's really sucking me into this thing is it's you just it, these ongoing sense of accomplishment. And you sit back and, oh, this that really worked out well. And oh, what's this one going to be like? And I'm really enjoying that, I have to say. So,
good. I'm pleased.
Yep.
We've converted you.
Yeah,
I fear.
I think I'll always be a needle pointer at heart, but I have to say this is a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
So yep.
But you know, don't forget when you're stitching a sampler, Gary, never be afraid to make it your own. If you want to throw in some speciality stitches, you know, some little things that you've carried over from your needle pointing, why not?
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, when that needlework teacher was teaching her pupils, there would have been some teachers that say, you have to do this exactly like this. But the good teachers would have shown their sampler to their students, would have talked about it, and then she would have sent those little girls away to design their own sampler based on her sampler. And, you know, when you get a chart of a reproduction sampler, take it and make it your own, and then you are following in the footsteps of the little girl who stitched that sampler. She took her needlework teacher's sampler and she tweaked it. She made it her own.
Yeah, that's so true. And I every time I sit down to that thing, it's, and I've had this thought even before I started it, what amazing talent and ability those little girls had to do these things, especially some of the ones that you have, the complexity that is in them and the beauty. And for these little girls to have the artistic vision and the use of color and shape to deliver these things is just impressive. I mean, I don't think I'll ever not be impressed with what they do. And some of yours are the gigantic pieces. They're so beautiful and full of things. And you think, yeah, and some little girl younger than my daughter, much younger than my daughter, did this thing. And it's impressive.
You know, just think of the counting exercise in placing their motifs and, you know, moving them around. And it's just, a sampler is a very amazing thing. And also, it's just this wonderful historical document as well. It's not just needlework at all.
Have you ever seen where one of these girls charted them, or they basically just did them on the fly? Do you know?
Well, one of the samplers that we reproduced for Nashville, Eliza Bell Cox, that is a cross-stitch sampler. But you can actually see that the design was drawn onto the fabric, not counted onto the fabric. Okay. Uh-huh. And the reason I can see that it was drawn is that there's a few little things that she forgot to fill in with her cross stitch. Oh. So I think that there are some designs that the little girls counted them out, and some designs that were drawn out and they filled them in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, yeah, I was wondering that the other night. And of course, I'm sure for a lot of them over time, if they were drawn out, that would have faded away or fallen away. But that's interesting, because so many of them are just so well placed. Everything is so well placed and in proportion and lined up that you'd think they'd have to do something other than just stick the needle in there and go for it.
Amy Cann, which is another one of our Nashville releases, you can see that she drew the center of her design out on her linen, because you can see the markings there. Then she just squashed all the stitches in. that little girl couldn't count. She was a Dolly daydreamer, Gary. She must have been the bane of her teacher's life. Her mind must have been on anything other than her needlework. She must have been, you know, chatting away, laughing, looking out of the window. So when people come to stitch her, they're going to have to be very much on their toes, because she kept me on my toes when I was charting it, and she kept Lisa on her toes as she was stitching it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very funny, Gary. Her original sampler, it resonates of this little girl's character and personality. You can feel her spirit is in that needlework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've seen so many of them. You must really start to get a sense of each one and the type of girl that's behind them.
Some of them really do. You can just feel them, you know, resonating out. It's you know, it's quite spiritual sometimes, actually. Yeah. You know, you can feel them, and that they do lead you in a way. So
that's
everybody thinks I'm batty, but it's true.
No, I've never heard anybody say you were batty. No, never heard that.
Right. You haven't talked to my husband then.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, he's got a little more insight than most. Yes. So, all right, let's just jump to that, because you sent me pictures of what you're introducing at Nashville. How many are you introducing? Oh, they're beautiful, Nicola. I called Marga over, because we work in the same room. We work at home.
Yes.
And the pictures were coming in, and I just said, come here, you got to see these things. How many do you have? They're beautiful. Oh, they're gorgeous.
We have 5 releases for Nashville. We have 2 Sarahs, an Eliza, a Hannah, and an Amy. And each one brings something very different. So we're hoping that we are offering something to everybody. They're all based on some exceptional samplers. The originals, they're all in very, very good condition. So each one was a joy to sit down and reproduce. Sarah Mary Larkworthy is the oldest sampler. She stitched her sampler in 1727, and the original sampler was exhibited in 2016. And when I saw the exhibition catalogue, my heart leapt when I saw this sampler, and I bought it on the spot without actually seeing it in person. And when she came, it was just a joy to sit down and reproduce something. I've not seen a sampler like this reproduced. And this was the one that when I've just been to America, I've just come back from America, and the workshop that I was giving was based on elements of this sampler. And everybody who attended the workshop, now are able to sit down and stitch Sarah's sampler. And I did that workshop with a video, so that in the video, I stitched out the design from start to finish, and everybody went home with a copy or access to that video. Yeah. So when they're stitching it at home, I'm with them and they can be following me. So that was that's the first release. And for those people who were unable to attend the workshops because they were oversubscribed, we will be making this workshop available online just for £10. And for that, they get a 12-page downloadable booklet with comprehensive instructions and a video that will take them through from start to finish, stitching out the freehand elements of Sarah. The next release that really excites me is Eliza Bell Cox. And I showed her this weekend on Facebook. She was stitched by Jaylee Halpin, and it's the most gorgeous flowing border. And for anybody who has the Feller number 2 book, if they would like to turn up page 140 and look at Elizabeth Elliot sampler stitched in 1835, 3 years after Eliza's, they will see that these two girls attended the same school. Mm. When I saw this sampler come up for auction, I thought, I know that sampler, and I knew I'd seen it in the Feller book, and I expected this sampler to be stitched entirely with speciality stitches. But when I got some close-up photographs and could see that this was cross-stitch over two for the border, it really excited me. I think that a lot of stitchers are going to have so much joy stitching Eliza's sampler. And Eliza Bell Cox, she comes with a fascinating history. We could find this girl from the day she was born right the way through to the day that she died as an old lady. She came from a moneyed family, and there's a lot of information about her. But having said that, it's a moneyed family. But her husband died after 3 years of marriage, leaving her with two children. She was 27 and she never remarried. Mm. So that's quite moving, really. But I think Eliza was a very warm, loving person. Her house was always full of visitors and family. And she actually took in her brother's three children when he died. Like, he was a wealthy man as well, but she raised his three children. So I feel that she's this lovely, warm-hearted mother hen. And then we've spoken about Amy. Amy Cann, a little girl with a twinkle in her eye. Her sampler is really sweet. It's a small sampler for Hands Across the Sea samplers, but it's packed with lots of colour. You can imagine, like with your grandchildren, Gary, when you sit little children down round a table with a pot of crayons, they all go for the bright clashing colours. And you can just imagine little girls sat round a schoolroom with a pile of threads on the table. They would all pull the bright ones first. Mm-hmm. And that's what Amy's done with hers. And the funny thing with Amy, when I saw her photograph of her sampler, I thought, what on earth has she stitched? And then when the sampler came and I could study it, I realised that she had stitched a Georgian landscape pleasure park, and it rises up to a folly. And once that clicked, the whole sampler, her design, I could follow what she was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And there's two little giraffes in this sampler. In 1827, the Pasha of Egypt sent George IV a live giraffe. And people could go and pay a penny to go and see this giraffe in Windsor Great Park. And, you know, this is only sort of 4 years later, Amy stitched giraffes in her sampler. So it must have been an interesting topic at that time. Mm-hmm. And the other sweet thing about Amy's sampler, her surname is Can, C-A-N-N. So when she spelt finished, it was only logical for her to spell finished with two N's. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Sure. Why not? Yep.
Yeah. So that was the really sweet thing about Amy. Hannah Gaskell. Now, Hannah's a big, big girl. Sandra reproduced Hannah and stitched her, and she's made a beautiful job of it. There's two unusual things about this sampler. One is bottom left-hand corner. There's a large dog with a little boy riding the dog, which is just absolutely so sweet. And the moment I saw this sampler, I thought of a boy and his dog make a glorious pair. No better friendship is found anywhere. For they talk and they walk and they run and they play, and they have deep secrets for many a day. That's what that sampler made me think of. But this sampler also has a double crucifix, and I can't think of any other English samplers that have a double crucifix. Now, I'm sure when your listeners hear me say that, we'll be flooded with examples, but that will be interesting. It'll be nice to learn of other English samplers that have two crucifixes on. Mm. So, and the last Nashville release is Sarah Dawes, the one with the border that gave me some grey hairs. And the lovely thing about, like, your eye immediately goes to the border and the most beautiful bird with attitude at the bottom. But the one thing that really touched me is the verse on this one. It's to my ever honored parents, and the last two lines are, and in these lines, dear parents, I impart the fondest, tenderest dictates of my heart. I just love that. It's just so
nice.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is, isn't it? Yep. Yeah. And it's a funny thing, there's two ladies on this sampler, and I've never seen these particular motifs before. And then within about 3 months of buying Sarah Dawes, up came another sampler with one of these ladies on. So life is full of coincidences.
Yeah. Now, which one of these is the double-sided one?
Oh, that one isn't a Nashville release.
Oh, that's not.
Reversible,
oh, okay.
No, the reversible sampler, it's one that when we release, we want to release it on its own. It's a very, very important sampler. It's going to be taught as a class. So initially, it'll only be available through a workshop.
Okay.
And I'm going to be teaching that workshop in England at Fobles in Cumbria in November of this year. And I believe that the class is oversubscribed. So I think we're going to be doing two back-to-back classes. If anybody who is in the UK is interested, you should contact Beverly at Fobles sooner rather than later. And then that class will also be taught at the Attic Needleworks and Sassy Jacks. But I haven't set any dates for the US for that class. I'll be back in the US in August. I'm hoping, if I'm lucky with my application, to be going to the Attic Summer School, not as part of the faculty, but as an attendee. And then I'll be teaching at the Attic January Symposium in 2019, a very interesting sampler, which Jean and I have had great fun choosing. I won't give any more details. I'll leave that for Jean to announce the sampler when, you know, she's ready. But I have my fingers crossed with summer school. Any event at the Attic is always oversubscribed. So Jean runs a strict system where you have to send an email in. She opens registration at a set time, and then you have to send your email in, and it's dealt with on a strict first come, first serve basis. So it's very, in fact, there's only a short time before that is the time. So I'm actually, as I'm talking to you, I have my email on my main computer, and I have a little alarm on because I'm going to be pressing the button to send that whilst we're on, well, whilst you're recording. But I will be back in the US in August of this year teaching at Sassy Jack's.
Oh, okay.
And it's the sampler I'm teaching is a very interesting one. It's from 1739. It's called Esther Benson. And Esther Benson is a sampler that's basically a band sampler, but a band sampler that's just transisting into a sampler with a border. It's very, very interesting. And there's a beautiful freehand panel with an Adam and Eve scene, and the apple tree is magnificent, and it's all freehand stitched, and I'm going to be coming back to teach that, so that's exciting. I found from my visit a few weeks ago that I really do love sitting down with other stitchers talking about samplers and teaching other people, you know, my little tips and tricks. It was very rewarding, my visit.
Yeah, it seemed to be very well received, I'll be sending you my work travel schedule so that you can schedule around that, because I couldn't go to either one because of work. So we have to work this out, Nicola.
Okay. Well, do you know, Gary, like so many people have asked me, what was the best thing about your trip? There were so many wonderful things that it's very difficult to say, and I will be carrying many memories for the rest of my life. But there's one thing that was so special, and it made every mile from Cornwall to America and back worth it. On the Saturday evening, we put on an extra class, and a 12-year-old girl came with her mother, and they sat down, and there was two television screens in Sassy Jack's, and the little girl was looking up at the high television screen, and one of the first slides that came on was of a little girl around 12 years of age, her age, stitching, and she looked up at that screen, and do you know what? She didn't take her eyes off that screen for the whole lecture. And as I was talking and the different images that were coming up, I couldn't help but watch her out of the corner of my eye. And you could see the story playing on her face. Uh-huh. And she was so drawn into it. And when I finished speaking, it took her a moment to come back to, you know, the present time.
Oh, she was captivated. Oh.
And you know what? She turned to her mother, and her face broke into this beautiful smile, and she started chatting away to her mother. And you know what, Gary, I'll never forget that little girl. Never ever. That was just amazing. And it didn't matter how tired I was that night, and I was tired because I'd been on my feet all day. It was just, well, it was wonderful.
Oh, that's terrific. As a former teacher, I've had a couple of those moments. I know what you mean. It's just everything is worth it. Everything is worth it when that happens
absolutely.
With a kid.
Well, you know, the talk was about an hour long, and that's a long time for a child to be engaged. But honestly, her eyes did not leave that TV screen. And, you know, the stories I was telling, there was ups and lows to these little girls' lives, and you could see it all across her face. That what she was feeling. It was wonderful.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's worth, that's worth everything. Yep.
It was.
That's great. Oh, yeah. That's fun. So the, cause you were at Sassy Jack's and then you were at the Attic. You had several events at both places, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, my visit to Sassy Jack's is meant to be 2 days that consisted of a lecture and a workshop, and It got oversubscribed, so I agreed to do a third day. I forewent the bit more, which I will do next time I go. And we put on a third event, and then that was oversubscribed, so I agreed to do an additional lecture only on the Saturday evening. And then when I found out that one lady was actually driving 9 hours just to come for the lecture, I said to the ladies, look, if you're happy, I'll work until I've given you the whole experience. So that was, I think I started at 8:45 in the morning and I sat down at 9:30 at night.
Oh,
it was wonderful. That little girl's face kept me going.
Yep. Yeah, that'll energize you. Yep.
It did. So it was quite funny, actually, because Kimberly booked me into the most amazing inn, an historic inn, and it was beautiful. It was sort of like, it was like a wooden house that was filled with all these gorgeous antiques. And when I arrived there in the dark, and Kimberly had to go and find the key. And I was thinking, well, that's strange. It's normally at a hotel, you just walk in. Anyway, it turned out I was the only person there.
Oh.
And I thought that they meant I was the only person staying there. But no, I was the only living soul in the house, Gary. And, you know, you watch these things on the TV, on the movies, don't you? People sort of arrive at this house.
Right,
it's sort of like haunted or psycho. So I was left in this strange house, house, that was wood and it creaked all by myself. So I thought, right, Nicola, make sure all the doors and windows are shut. So I sort of opened a door and it was pitch dark, trying to find the light switch, couldn't find it. And you're putting your hand into a dark room. And I opened one door and there was this cold blast. It was obviously a cellar. So with that, I shut it. I ran upstairs. I locked my room. I put my suitcases behind the door. So that was the funny thing. And then in the morning, the gentleman who ran the inn, and it was beautiful and they ran it very well, he was showing me photographs of a 350-pound bear that came to feed off the bird feeders.
Oh.
Well, that would have finished me off if I'd known about it. So that was an experience, but it was wonderful. Asheville is such a pretty place. It must be wonderful to visit in the fall when you've got all the leaves turning, and everybody was so friendly. Americans are so polite. I think that when you go into a diner or a restaurant, the service you have is just quite amazing.
That's good to hear that, by golly.
No, it is. And yeah. I learned a new word. Y'all. Y'all.
Oh, y'all. Y'all.
Y'all.
Yeah, y'all. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great.
And yeah, they have that problem down there. Y'all.
Do they?
And then there's all y'all. Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, I didn't learn that. But
that's the other one. That's for the group. All y'all.
Yeah. Right. Well, people came so far to hear me, and we had a lovely time. It was just the room was buzzing every day, and there was a lot of laughter, and yeah, it was just absolutely fantastic. And then I flew from Asheville to Charlotte, and I saw the rocking chairs in the airport. We don't have rocking chairs in the UK at airports. So that was really sick. I had to take a photograph and send my husband a picture of the rocking chairs. And then
I've been to a lot of airports in the country, and yeah, that one always stands out for the rocking chairs. Yes.
Yeah, I thought it's just little things like that. Just absolutely lovely. And then I flew to Phoenix, and you know, the moment I arrived, you know, Jean just wrapped me up in the warmth of her personality and her love, and it was just absolutely wonderful. And I couldn't wait to get to the attic, and, you know, just walking into the attic. It's been on my list for so long, Gary, and I never thought I would have the opportunity to go to the attic.
Well, this was your first time?
The first time, yes.
Oh.
The first time.
Oh, I thought you'd been there before. Oh, my.
No, I haven't. Until I went to Nashville last year, I hadn't actually flown for over 15 years. So It was just.
Oh, you must have felt like you died and went to heaven when you walked into that place.
I felt so emotional. I felt sort of overcome with tears, actually, just walking in. And, you know, you've been there. The brain can't absorb.
No.
Everything is just, you know, it's just, well, just amazing. And it was just so wonderful to see so many different models of designs I've been looking at and have the charts for, and just to see the actual models. It was wonderful. I could have spent a week in that store just looking at the models on the wall.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. And then, you know, you get to all the little knick-knack type of things. It's just, well, absolutely amazing. And the frames. The frames that are there were just absolutely wonderful.
Well, her framing person is a brilliant talent. Yes.
Absolutely. I watch Sandy work and she's fantastic. And in fact, I was in my frames today and I said, do you mind if I buy my moldings in America and have them sent over for you to put together? And he said, no. He said he didn't mind. So now I'm going to send Gina a photograph and say, pick a frame and send, you know, chop it and send it over for me.
Yeah.
So that was, oh, and then the linen tables, Gary.
Yep.
So,
That it literally is a place you cannot walk in that store for a normal shopping experience and take it all in.
No,
you have to go back. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mind you, at Sassy Jack's, what Kimberly's carrying in that store is absolutely amazing. And her linen selection is wonderful as well. But yeah, it was just lovely because this was the very first time in my life that I could actually select a piece of Lakeside linen myself, because we don't have Lakeside over here. I've always had to rely on other people. It was just lovely. And I must admit, I bought rather a lot of it. Gary, I haven't told my husband how much linen I've bought yet, so
there we go.
He better not be listening.
Yeah. we'll count on that. Yeah. What is it, the saying? My greatest fear is when I die and my spouse discovers that what I actually paid is not what I said I paid. Yeah.
Well, he's my accountant, so he will find out.
Yeah, eventually. Okay. But you can plan that so you're not at home when he finds out. So
it's lovely. I've got it all laid out on my sewing table in my studio, and I haven't had the heart to put it away, because every time I walk into my sewing studio and I see this linen, well, covering the table, it sends a little thrill up me. So
That's great. Yeah,
it's these little things make stitchers very happy.
Yes. and the other part about the attic is Jean absolutely oozes samplers. It's fun to talk to her. It really is.
And it's amazing her instant recall, the name of a design, you know, the designer. You know, she just remembers so much information. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
So, and the symposium was absolutely fantastic as well. Betsy Morgan is such a gifted teacher. It was very, very interesting, you know, participating in the symposium.
Yeah, you had, there were three or four of you that taught, right?
Yes. Vicky Needlework Press opened on the Friday evening, and she taught a little Quaker Pinky, which was absolutely adorable. And it was, you know, the whole thing was put together so professionally and taught so well. And then on Saturday morning, I gave my talk, and I was very grateful for how well received it was. And it was just such a thrill to stand up and talk to other stitchers, that I wasn't nervous at all. I felt very much as if I was amongst friends, which I was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could see on people's faces how interested they were. And then after I finished, Betsy Morgan taught her. She taught a class on the Saturday, like an extra class as well. And then she taught on the Saturday and the Sunday morning. It was just a really very, very special weekend. And if anybody has the opportunity to attend an event that Jean puts on, oh gosh, it's so worth it. It really, really is.
Yeah, but so, sign up quickly, because those things, everyone she does sells out.
Like, sells out. Yes, it does. And you can see why as well.
Yep.
So,
top flight all the way around. Yep.
Absolutely. So, but you know, Kimberly at Sassy Jacks, she has a wonderful list of events that are happening. And there's going to be a very interesting lecture there on Bristol orphanage samplers in October. And so, you know, people ought to turn up details at Sassy Jacks about that, because that's going to be very interesting as well. So,
yeah, I'm really excited. I'm excited for Kimberly. She's laying the groundwork for really an impressive business and impressive offering.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the lovely things, that when you go to Kimberly's store, is the number of antique samplers she has. She has a wonderful collection of antiques, and she's so generous with showing those to stitchers. And you know, you can study them very close up. So you know, it's worth going to Sassy Jack's just to look at the antiques. But she's carrying a lot of different things. Her band linen is very, very interesting. And of course, she's going to be having the Bard House opening hopefully later this year. I hope when I go back in August that I'll be teaching in the Bard House. And Kimberly took me and showed me it from the outside. And gosh, that's going to be a really atmospheric building to be in to sit and stitch on reproduction samplers. So very exciting times.
Yep. No, that's great.
Very exciting times.
That house is going to be a special place. That's
absolutely.
Yeah, she really.
And there's going to be a designated teaching room. And her husband Everett, he's such a gifted carpenter. The things that he makes for her for the store is just amazing. Absolutely amazing. I went over with two suitcases. They were 32 kilos each, and I'm not sure what that is in pounds. Is that about 60 odd pounds?
Yeah.
And he picked one
Nicolai,
up in his hands.
Jeez, Nicolai. That's a ton of weight. Holy smokes.
Oh, I know, but there was hardly any clothes in it. It was all samplers. Didn't you see the samplers I took, Gary?
I did. And that was my first thought, is how did you haul all those with you?
Yes. Careful packing.
No kidding. Oh, yeah.
Careful packing. So.
Yep. Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. See, and then we got to wrap up here. But okay, so I wanted to make sure that everybody understood. So all of these samplers for the Nashville show, then, and Nashville's a cash and carry show, right?
For the trade, it's not open to the public.
Right. And so
if anybody's interested in Nashville releases, you should contact your local needlework store and place a pre-order. Designers such as myself, I'm coming from the UK. There is a limit to the number of charts that I can bring with me. Last year, our sales were phenomenal, and we ran out of some things. If you're interested in a hats chart, let your needlework store know so that they can pre-order, so that their supplies are guaranteed.
Right.
But I do think that Nashville, it's a time to support your local needlework store. At the end of the day, all these stores that attend Nashville, you know, a lot of them are traveling very long distances, long car journeys, flights. Some of them have to close their stores to attend. You know, it's a big investment for stores to attend Nashville, you know, to go home with the latest designs. And it's a time for needleworkers to support their stores. Like, you know, I sell direct to the public. I have a website. But, you know, this is the time. Go and place your order with the stores.
Yeah, that's it really is an opportunity. I know Monica at the store I go to at Welcome Stitchery, she always has an event, a Saturday event after the Nashville show, so that you can go in and see and buy all of the of the latest. But yeah, order ahead of time, and then they'll come back from that show. Your store owner comes back from the show with your charts, with your
charts. That's right. You know, that's important, because You know, like for myself, I won't be home from Nashville for about 2 or 3 weeks after the show closes. So, you know, what I run out of won't get shipped until I get home. And everybody wants their charts as soon as market opens.
Right. So, yeah, that, and Christine and I are going to be there. We're going to be there and be interviewing Nicola and others and talking to store owners and doing video, if we can, of the various new products. So we're excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun for us.
You will really enjoy your visit to Nashville. And we're in room 317, so make sure you come and see us, Gary.
Top of the list, Nicola. You're first on the list. Yep, we'll be there. So, all right, we're going to have to end this thing, Nicola. Thanks so much for filling in for Christine.
You're so welcome.
And always fun to talk with you. And our Sunday guest is needlepoint designer and teacher Diane Herman. And the conversation Christine and I had with Diane was absolutely incredible. She's an amazing woman. So watch for that. And we'll be back. Christine and I will be back next Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.